Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is David Belowski. I represent Primax Recoveries, Incorporated. Your Honor, the District Court erred in granting summary judgment in favor of Mr. Sevilla for the following reasons. The Court failed to properly consider the legal significance of Mr. Sevilla's repudiation of Primax's waiver for purposes of applying the doctrine of estoppel. The Court also committed legal error in finding that Primax's waiver was supported by an exchange of consideration when, in fact, no consideration for the waiver was exchanged between the parties.
You're arguing that Primax did not irrevocably waive any right to seek reimbursement from Mr. Sevilla.
I am not making that argument, nor can I on this record. What I am arguing is that after Primax did its best to waive its rights to the fund in question and attempt to walk away from a troublesome dispute, Mr. Sevilla did absolutely everything in his power to resurrect and revive the dispute for the purposes of adjudication. And
wait a minute. They cannot revive your claim, right? If you say you don't want this $2,300, they can't say, oh, we don't accept that. That's absurd, right?
Well, we thought so, and
no, it is. I mean, you have no money claim against them. You withdrew that. You're not seeking the $2,300, are you?
Well, we've been told that we.
Well, are you? I don't understand. No one can tell you that you are seeking the money. You either are or you aren't. That's your decision to make. Are you seeking it or not?
Your Honor, quite frankly, we thought.
Don't give me that quite frankly. That's always the preface for an uncandid statement. Are you seeking the $2,300 or not?
In this case.
It's a simple yes or no.
No.
Okay. Then you have no case.
Moot. We believe that we do have a case.
You don't. What's your dispute? You're not seeking any money.
The dispute has to do with the conflicting claims to the money.
No, you have no claim to the money. You've abandoned your claim. There is no conflict.
The fact of the matter is that we've been told by Judge Madden in the state court action that we do have a claim to the money. And as ridiculous as that.
No judge can tell you you have a claim. You gave up the claim.
Your Honor.
No one can force you to sue for money.
Your Honor
has
seen.
If you have a quarrel in the state judge doing something goofy, go argue it in the state court system.
We've been doing that unsuccessfully.
You can't come into the federal court to get an appeal from a state court judgment.
And I don't believe we're attempting to do that.
You sure are. You're trying to reverse that Illinois appellate court decision that reinstated the counterclaim.
See, if we were to reach the question of whether the CNA plan forecloses application of the common fund doctrine, we would run into a problem with the parallel and let's call it overlapping litigation between the federal and state courts. And that is exactly the issue that is pending in the Illinois court. And that's the problem here.
But as a fiduciary under ERISA, we have the duty to bring a controversy arising under Mr. Sevilla's plan to the attention of the federal court because it has the exclusive jurisdiction.
You have no contrary. You gave up your claim. You're not seeking anything.
You're
seeking to do is to undo the Illinois litigation.
You
went into Illinois court, made a big mistake there, got socked with this counterclaim. Now you're trying to get the federal court to bail you out.
We're asking the federal court to make a determination as to what the rights and obligations of the parties are.
But there's no dispute, because you're not seeking any money.
The record fairly reflects that there's a substantial dispute, and it goes
What's
beyond
the money. How would you define the dispute?
I would define the dispute as the disposition of the fund.
But you're not seeking the fund. It's none of your business.
And yet we've been told that we may have an interest in it, and we
But you've repudiated the interest. You have no interest.
Anything that we would say would be totally advisory at this point. And that's the first no-no.
The other situation that we're faced with is the potential for liability to Mr. Sevilla above and beyond the amount of the fund.
Sure, that's the counterclaim. Sure. Fight it out in Illinois courts.
Well, the counterclaim really goes to the issue of class action liability.
Doesn't matter what it goes to. It's a dispute in the Illinois courts, and you fight it out there.
We're really not here to get an opinion on the counterclaim. I'm here to get a determination that, insofar as my client's duty to Mr. Sevilla personally is concerned, we don't owe him anything further under the plan. And Your Honors clearly have the jurisdiction to say so.
Oh, my goodness. Ridiculous law.
Yeah. Under your approach, if we allowed this to go forward, we would be opening up a rule that would allow disappointed parties in state court to come to federal court and bring a direct action in federal court when they're unhappy. I mean, that's a big...
It's indeed regrettable that my client initially commenced litigation in state court.
Plus, I can't even... Isn't the check void now?
Sure.
So, I mean, you have a problem there. Even if we could say that it should be here, the check is void. So, I mean, I think that's another major hurdle, even if you get over the first hurdle, which I don't see how you can get over that.
Well, the check was actually most recently reissued in the year 2000, only several months before we filed the lawsuit. The check at the time that this lawsuit was commenced was quite negotiable, and it was within Mr. Sevilla's control to negotiate it. And the fact that he didn't, and the fact that he repeatedly contended, that we had an interest in the check, gave us reason to believe that we needed some certain determination as to what the party's relative rights and obligations were. And Mr. Sevilla, as Your Honors have seen from the record, has contended that there's more here than just a question of a percentage of the check that Mr. Sevilla thinks that he may be entitled to under the fund doctrine, for example.
But you're not a defendant in this case. You make it sound as if Sevilla has sued you in federal court and is trying to get money from you.
Well, in a declaratory judgment context, I think that
no,
is indeed what happened.
You can't just have declaratory. You can't just wander into court and say there's somebody who may want to get more money from me, and therefore I want a declaratory judgment.
Well, I would suggest that this is not at all dissimilar from the Winstead case, in which an ERISA plan was able to file suit against a non-ERISA insurer for the purpose of determining what the extent of obligation was.
Was there a waiver in that case?
There was not a waiver in that case.
Right.
But there was instead a question of conflicting coordination of benefit provisions in a plan and a policy. The policy was not subject to ERISA, but the plan was. And the plan filed a declaratory judgment case under ERISA seeking to find out what its rights, duties, and obligations were.
Look, now, the bottom line here...
It could have gone... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It could have gone to state court where there clearly would have been plenary jurisdiction, but this court found that there was jurisdiction for that lawsuit because there was a substantial federal question involved, and that substantial federal question was what the burdens or obligations or rights under the ERISA plan should be. And that is not a question that I can present to the state court, even if I wanted to. And that is why Your Honors have to intervene and play a role in this.
Now, what is it you think Sevilla is seeking from you?
I think that Mr. Sevilla has been rather cagey in describing what he's seeking, but we think that he's asking for something in excess of the $2,483.71 that's in dispute. We don't know. We don't think he should be entitled to anything more than
that. No, the $2,400 is not in dispute.
I mean, somewhere it must say what he's seeking from you.
Well, it's clearly not a record in an unequivocal manner in this case. But we think that there should be a determination that we did walk away from this thing and that we owe Mr. Sevilla nothing more, personally. Mr. Sevilla is only before this court in a personal capacity, and Your Honors have that jurisdiction to find that we owe him nothing more than we already gave up. And because there is this fund that was caught in transit, so to speak, in limbo, I think that Your Honors do
the
have...
The fund is irrelevant. You have no claim to it.
Well, I still think that even in apart from the claim, there is jurisdiction under 502A3. I see that my time is up. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Blas. Mr. Carnes?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Michael Carnuth on behalf of FLE, Richard Cibilla.
So what are you seeking over there that they're not aware of?
We are in the state court action. We counterclaimed for, on behalf of a class for the sole purpose of seeking a right to have Primax apply the common fund doctrine against the reimbursement claims. That's the sole issue in that case. Subsequent to our filing a countersuit, they tried every way possible to thwart our action, and this venue was one of their several means in trying to do that. We believe that this case was brought without any good basis under the law, without any factually and legally, there's no reason that this case should be before Your Honors.
Speaking about bases, on what basis did Mr. Cibilla argue in state court that Primax's waiver was ineffective?
In the state court action, well, Your Honor, the two are mutually exclusive. There has never been an adjudication as to the validity of Primax's waiver except for Judge Hibbler's ruling below. He found that they expressly and unequivocally waived their claim.
Yeah, but did Mr. Cibilla argue in state court that Primax's waiver was ineffective?
He made that argument in the brief before the state court.
Right.
But the state court decided that whether or not the
I'm not being clear, I guess. What I'm asking you is on what basis did he argue in state court? What was in his briefs there?
In the briefs in the state court action, we argued that the waiver was ineffective to moot Cibilla's class action counterclaim. That even if they did waive their claim, that class action counterclaim is an independent action that should go forward because we had already moved for class certification prior to them seeking to moot our case.
Well,
on the
does that rate. Argument bind Mr. Cibilla here in some way? Could it bind him in some way?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor, because the two are mutually exclusive. Whether or not their waiver is valid has no effect on a class action counterclaim when the named plaintiff has already sought a motion for class certification. So deciding that their waiver is valid, which the court below did do, does not impact or affect, as Judge Hilber acknowledged, the validity of Cibilla's class action counterclaim.
Well, do you have to replace Cibilla in the class action on the theory that his claim is now moot?
We believe we do not, because we've attempted to move for class certification on a reasonably expedited basis, and if they have the opportunity to just moot the named plaintiffs by tendering full consideration of the relief sought, that would thwart the
right,
class
no,
action.
Right, no, they do, yeah, one by one. I just wondered if... So what is your class action counterclaim seeking in the state court?
Only to require Primax to offset their reimbursement claims pursuant to the Illinois Common Fund Doctrine. In this court, on at least two occasions...
Are your class members people who want money from Primax? Is that the idea?
No, it's not money coming from Primax, essentially. It's an offset of what was created that benefited Primax and others. It's a common fund that was created by these attorneys who got a tort recovery, and Primax, on behalf of a health plan, is trying to assert a claim against it. And it's not money coming out of Primax's pocket. It's just a reduction of that reimbursement claim pursuant to the Illinois Common Fund Doctrine.
So these class members have a reimbursement claim? I'm puzzled. What are they? Are they seeking money or an injunction?
No, these class members solely have a claim for application of the fund doctrine.
Well, what do they want concretely? I don't give a damn about a doctrine. What do they want concretely from Primax? What is the relief sought?
For a return of monies that were not reduced pursuant to the fund doctrine.
So they are asking for money.
Well, for the failure of Primax to...
No. They're asking for money.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
But and what is the status of that lawsuit now, this moment?
The status is that that Sevilla just was awarded summary judgment on his individual claims, and we are now pursuing our briefing on our motion for class certification.
Oh, the class hasn't been certified yet?
No, but we've tried to get to the class determination years ago, Your Honor, and they've done every single... They've done several things to prevent us from getting there.
How much is the class seeking altogether?
Well, we've, as of yet, have not gotten documents pursuant to our discovery requests in order to value the claim in this case.
But you say Sevilla got a motion for summary judgment, so does that mean the court held that the common fund doctrine is applicable?
Yes, Your Honor, and that has been decided by the Illinois Supreme Court on three occasions, in Schultens versus Schneider, which this court adopted in the Blackburn decision, held that ERISA preemption does not apply when an ERISA plan is trying to pursue a reimbursement claim against a participant. That in that case dealt with the preemption provision of 514A. Just earlier this year, the Illinois Supreme Court also issued an opinion titled Bishop versus Burgard, where they went even further and said that the fund doctrine overrides Section 502A3 of ERISA, and also it also overrides any plan language that would try to usurp the application of the fund doctrine. And we believe that this court, as it did in Blackburn, when it adopted Schultens, should also adopt the reasoning that the Bishop case laid out just recently.
Mm-hmm.
They claim, I mean, we believe that this case could be dismissed, as Judge Hiller held, on the fact that there is no federal jurisdiction. Great West, which is the case that controls this issue, held that a plan, which is a plan fiduciary, can only assert equitable claims under Section 502A3. And the substance of the court's opinion was that
Mr. Belofsky seems to be seeking an injunction against Sevilla that he can't ask for more money or something. Is that what he wants? Does Sevilla himself, as opposed to the class, is he seeking additional money from Primax?
No. The only issue in the state court action is an offset to the $2,400. So it's less than what the $2,400 is. They waived the whole $2,400, and we're seeking less than that on behalf of Sevilla individually. So what they're trying to allude to is pure...
But I thought you just said you don't know what you're seeking because you haven't gotten the discovery.
Well, on behalf of the class. I mean, on behalf of everybody. But this case is only about Sevilla. This case is not the class action. This case is only the individual claim regarding Sevilla.
So you know what you're seeking
on behalf of Sevilla, we know what we're seeking.
Not anyone else.
Right. And essentially, the Sevilla individual claim in state court is seeking one-third of the $2,400.
Well, he's just seeking one-third of the $2,400?
Correct. Which
but
which
he's
is
got the whole
$2,400,
doesn't he?
No, he's seeking... The way that the Illinois Common Fund Doctrine works is that it equitably allocates the attorney fees that were incurred to create the common fund.
No, I understand, but I thought that Primax had surrendered all claim to the $2,400.
Correct.
So what'll happen? But you say Sevilla is only entitled to $800. So what happens to the $1,600?
It's important to note the sequence of things. And we countersued after they sued us in state court over 8 years ago on this very same reimbursement claim. And after that is when they tried to dismiss on federal preemption. They won in state court. We had it reversed in the appellate court. After that, they tried then to waive the claim. in state court. They actually didn't try. They did waive their claim.
Right. They wanted. They tried to moot your state court action, so they surrendered the claim to the 20. So who has the $2,400 now? Is this
in limbo?
The $2,400 is currently in escrow. However, it was in the custody of Primax for over 7 years.
No, no, forget that. It's in escrow. Now, Primax has relinquished any claim to it. So if your client gets $800, what happens to the other $1,600?
That's something that we haven't considered, but if they waived it, then it's possible that it would go to Sevilla. If they have no claim.
Are there claimants to this these escrowed funds?
Not to this.
Just Sevilla. So Sevilla's going to get a windfall. Okay.
But again, Your Honor, we believe that this, Your Honor, that this case was ill-conceived. That this was just an attempt to collaterally attack the state court orders that were entered against them, and it had no basis in fact since they waived their claim. It had no legal basis in law because this is not a federal issue, as this court held in Schultens and this court held in Blackburn and Special versus Siebold. And the Great West decision actually supports those two cases. You know, the Great West decision actually dismissed the exact same claims that they try to assert in this federal action. Injunctive relief, declaratory judgment relief, and restitution. Those are the claims that they assert here. And Great West held that you cannot assert those in the reimbursement context. And the court indicated that you have to go beyond the label to find what the substance of the relief sought is. And here it's money damages. They want money damages.
Well, they don't actually.
Your Honor, we believe that there's that the standard review that the court should take in terms of the waiver is clear error. There's a dispute between the parties on that. They say that's de novo, but whether or not they waived their claim is a factual determination. I believe that Your Honors have already...
Well, there's no dispute they waived it. I understand. He's not seeking it. He doesn't want the $2,400 back.
So there's really no case of controversy that this court can even decide. Which supports our request for sanctions against them. And we think that the only incorrect decision that the lower court made was not sanctioning them, given that they fully knew that they waived their claim and that this court's decision was only used to collaterally attack the judgments entered against them in the state court action.
Okay.
There's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Lasky, how much time do you have? 4 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll try to be brief. I heard some things that were a little disconcerting. Mr. Carnoot made a reference to the fact that he was only entitled at one point to one-third of the $2,400, thus reinforcing our suggestion that the remaining amount of money does remain in limbo. The fact that no amount of the $2,400...
Okay, yeah, it's in limbo, but you have no claim to it, so it's none of your business. You fight it out with the state of Illinois if it seeks an S-cheat of it.
Mr. Carnoot made some reference to class-based claims. We don't believe that the class action claims have any relevance to this matter.
They have to, because since you're not arguing, you don't have no claim to the $2,400, you're seeking a declaration of some sort. I don't understand how you can seek a declaration when Sevilla has no potential claim against you. The only people who have potential claims against you are other members of the class.
Mr. Sevilla...
He's made clear Sevilla is not seeking any money from you.
Mr. Sevilla just obtained summary judgment on an interlocutory basis, the predicate of which was that we were unjustly enriched by reason of his attorney.
But he is not in, he is not seeking any money from you. His claim has been satisfied. He's got his $800, maybe some more by accident. It's the other class members who are seeking relief.
We're not asking for a determination as to any certified or uncertified.
But your opponent has made clear that Sevilla does not want more money from you. Therefore, what quarrel do you have with Sevilla? You may have quarrel with other people. What with Sevilla?
I think
he doesn't want anything from you that he doesn't have already.
I think that's a fair and just determination. We believe there was jurisdiction for the court below to have made it in the context of the lawsuit that we brought, and I think that we should have the benefit now of the res judicata effect of that determination.
I don't know what you're talking about. This case is moot. You have no quarrel with Sevilla. He doesn't want anything from you, and you don't want anything from him.
Are you worried about going back to state court and meeting Mr. Sevilla again? Is that a problem?
We're still litigating with Mr. Sevilla. That case continues.
It can't. He doesn't want anything from you. He's just there as the class representative.
I only wish that were true.
It is true. He said it was. Your opponent said it was true.
In his
we will repeat it.
In his
he can't take any more money from you.
On this statement of uncontroverted facts filed in connection with the summary judgment motion, he admitted that he took a completely opposite position in the state court. And your honors are well aware of the fact that he has done that repeatedly. And that is what led to summary judgment. If we owe Mr. Sevilla nothing further, if the plan has no further obligation to Mr. Sevilla, it seems to me that there was jurisdiction for the court below to say so. And we should be entitled to the benefit of that determination for all purposes, so that we do not have to face Mr. Sevilla again in any proceeding.
Well, let me ask you, since the waiver was clear and unequivocal, I mean, why shouldn't we reverse the district court's sanction order? Counsel just mentioned that at the end. Can you just give me 1 minute why we shouldn't reverse?
Yes. Mr. Sevilla is not identifying, for your honors, any matter about which the district court abused its discretion. And quite frankly, even if the district court, even if this court were to review what the district court did de novo, there is nothing that would indicate that what we did delayed the resolution of the proceeding below or had any effect, deleterious or otherwise, with matters in the state court action. There is therefore no basis for a 1927 award in this case.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you very much.